This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Carol Moseley Braun plans to end her White House bid Thursday, leaving an all-male field for the presidency and giving her support to Democratic frontrunner Howard Dean. Braun was to officially endorse the former Vermont governor Thursday afternoon during an appearance at Carroll High School in Carroll, Iowa, said Dean campaign manager Joe Trippi. Dean said Wednesday that he welcomed the endorsement of the former senator from Illinois. Trippi said Braun approached Dean after a recent debate and told him she was considering leaving the race and backing him. Tens of thousands of Shiite Muslims shouting "No to America" marched Thursday throughout Iraq to back their spiritual leader's call for early elections, a stand that could stymie a U.S. blueprint for transferring power to a new Iraqi administration. The peaceful demonstration in Basra, Iraq's second largest city, followed a string of violent incidents across the country, including a car bombing in Baqaba and a series of clashes between U.S. troops and insurgents that left 20 people dead. An estimated 20 to 30,000 Shiite Muslims turned out to support Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Husseini al-Sistani's demand that an interim legislature be elected directly and not chosen in provincial caucuses, as is called for under the American plan. A winter storm packing fierce winds, frigid temperatures, and snow pounded the east on Thursday, causing fender benders and traffic woes, as well as dangerous cold. Temperatures weren't expected to rise out of the single digits Thursday throughout much of the Northeast, where Watertown, New York dropped to 31 below zero and the morning wind chill was minus 46 degrees. Maine Governor John Baldacci declared a civil emergency after wind chills of 30 to 50 below zero a day earlier. The heaviest snow of the storm fell in Minnesota to Michigan, where strong winds produced blizzard-like conditions in parts of the Great Lakes and upper Midwest. More IE America Radio Network news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
A rural Montana man says he was upset with a car full of teens who played their music too loud, but he was the one punished for turning the volume up. The Montana Supreme Court on Tuesday upheld Allison Chapman's disorderly conduct conviction for yelling at the teens to get out of town. Four teens parked on a public road in front of Chapman's house in 2001 weren't blasting their stereo at the time, although Chapman said they did so almost every night. Chapman admitted he went into the street and scolded the teens. He denied shouting or yelling, but he said he used an expletive in order to get them to leave. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
When you hear a highly paid athlete say about a new contract, it's not about the money. You can bet it's about the money. Likewise, when you hear a corporate chieftain say about a new advertising campaign, it's not meant to be intrusive. You can bet it's meant to be very intrusive. Indeed, the very idea of advertising is to intrude into your head, doing whatever it takes to get there and plant a brand name like some alien pod of commercialization. Take the exec who made the not-intrusive assertion. He's a Toyota honcho, and he just ponied up $100 million for branding rights to the basketball stadium in Houston. That means that this taxpayer-built facility will now be called the Toyota Center. It'll be covered inside and out with Toyota's logo and ads. Its lounge will be named Lexus Lounge. Its parking garage will be named for Toyota's Tundra trucks. It will have Toyota vehicles positioned prominently throughout the arena. And there will be a Toyota sales office at the games, staffed with sales reps hawking the cars. But at least, it's not meant to be intrusive. Then there's the brand new public monorail system in Las Vegas. Its naming rights are being sold to corporations that'll plaster the place with their logos and ads as though they own it. First to buy into this monorail was Nextel, the phone huckster. It'll have one of the system's trains covered with its corporate colors, name, logo, and promos. One of the monorail's main stops will be named the Nextel Station, complete with a store and a Nexpert bar staffed with employees promoting products. Yet Nextel's VP for marketing says, "I'm sensitive to the issue of over-commercialization." Yeah, like a hog is sensitive to overeating. You want sensitive? The ad agency peddling the people's monorail says it doesn't see the system as transportation, but as transportainment. This is Jim Hightower saying, "Take me now, Lord. I've lived too long."
I have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and all around the planet. Boy, George Bush. In this first hour, I want to give you an overview of some economic issues. You know, what is happening to America? What is the future? Is this country headed for a train wreck, or not? Could it be that everything's going to be just fine? First, a couple of just headlines, as it were. The National Academy of Sciences. Now, the Academy is an independent, nonpartisan body that was created by an act of Congress. So they publish a journal called the Journal of the American the Academy of Sciences for the United States of America, and it's probably the most prestigious journal that you can get published in, and it's certainly one of the most prestigious science bodies because they don't let stuff out. You know, being chartered by Congress, they have to be sensitive to all sides and to all issues. And if they can't back something up with lots of solid science, they just don't say it. They don't do it. The National Academy of Sciences just issued a report indicating that about 18,000 Americans die every year as a result of the fact that more than 40 million of us lack health insurance. About 18,000 people die each year as a result of not having insurance. They said it's time for our nation to extend coverage to everyone. Now, I know there's a lot of cons out there who don't understand how the system works, or perhaps folks who are new to this program who are going, "Oh, wait a minute, you're going to raise our taxes? We can't afford to pay for this. What are you talking about?" It turns out we pay 47% more per person than Switzerland for health insurance. The United States, roughly $6,000 per person per year. That's more than any nation in the world pays on a per-person basis. It's almost half again more than what Switzerland pays, which is the next most expensive. And so if we were to simply take all of the money that is flowing through the health insurance and healthcare system in all its many varied ways, the hundreds of millions of dollars that are going to big corporations like Bill Frist's family fortune, the pharmaceutical companies, the health insurance company, you took all that stuff and you just combined it into one, so it's all coming out of one faucet. Now, that faucet wouldn't impose controls on the system. It wouldn't say, or you have to go to this doctor, not that doctor, like the health insurance companies do. I mean, wasn't it ironic, the Harry and Louise ads that in 1984 scared everybody away from Bill Clinton's plan for a national health insurance program, their big threat. You know, Louise, we're not going to be able to choose the doctor we go to. Oh, no, Harry, that'll be a disaster. I want to pick my doctor. And right after national health care was defeated, what did the insurance companies start doing? What did the HMOs start doing and the PPOs? They came out with lists of doctors that you can go to. I find that particularly ironic. Extraordinarily ironic. But anyhow, the National Academy of Sciences, and I quote, comprehensive reform of the health insurance system rather than expansion of the safety net is essential. And how you do this is very simple. You put it in the hands of a single payer, that being the government. The government, now, I'm not saying the government runs the health care system. See, this is the distinction that the cons will try to confuse this. They'll say, oh, you want the government running health care. No. I don't want my doctor working for the government. That's the system they have in England. It's socialized medicine, and it doesn't work particularly well. It's better, frankly, I think, than what we have here. I have used the medical system in England, and it, you know, it has some significant deficiencies, but at least everybody's covered. But no, I'm not advocating socialized medicine. Instead, what you have is a single-payer healthcare system like they have in Germany, like they have in Switzerland, like they have in Canada. Very straightforward. By the way, find me one Canadian who's come to the United States because they couldn't get the health care that they wanted in Canada. It's just that there was a, I don't have the paper here in front of me now. This was a month or so ago. I told you about this. I had the clipping on it. And there was a group that actually went looking. And what they found was that there are thousands of Americans who go to Canada. In fact, we're chartering buses here in Vermont to take senior citizens to Canada to get health care and to buy drugs. But they couldn't, they were unable to find, I mean, they were offering a bounty. They were unable to find Canadians who had come to the United States. There are very good doctors in Canada, and there are doctors who decide not to take government payment and just deal with the rich. So the rich can have their own doctors, no problem, just like here in the United States. And everybody else has a doctor. Everybody else has. So anyhow, and frankly, the Canadian system is underfunded. But they're spending about a third of what we spend on per person in Canada than what we spend. And yet the Canadian health statistics are dramatically better than ours. I mean, our infant mortality rates are so low, I mean, so bad, that we're at the top of the level of third world nations. But we're way below all of Western Europe, Canada, on it goes. So anyhow, you have basically the problem is that all of our healthcare dollars, because they're being paid for by all these insurance companies and HMOs and PPOs, they're all taking their piece of the action. When $100 for healthcare goes through Medicare, between $1 and $3 sticks to the fingers of Medicare. That's what it costs to administer the program. That's it. When $100, and so you get $97 to $99 worth of drugs and doctors and hospitals. When $100 goes through private health insurance companies, depending on the company and depending on the part of the country, between $15 and $30 sticks to the fingers of the company. But the cons say the health insurance companies are more efficient. Well, yes, they're actually probably delivering health care at 2.7% cost instead of 3% cost, but they've got to pay multi-million dollar salaries to CEOs. Do you know of any bureaucrats in the government who are making multi-million dollar salaries? They've got to have their corporate jets with the gold-plated fixtures in the bathroom and the bed in the back. Do you know of any government officials who have corporate jet? Other than George Bush. They've got to pay dividends to their shareholders. Whatever, they've got to show a profit so that they can take part of that profit and split it up among the people who own their stock. The government doesn't have to pay dividends. So there's all these overheads that are associated with the corporate way of doing things that cause corporations to be less efficient than government at doing certain things. Now, if government tried to get into the business of making and selling T-shirts or widgets or, you know, matchbooks or railroads or whatever, they wouldn't be as efficient as industry. They're not that good at manufacturing. This is why the whole Marxist idea of government controlling the means of production and distribution is it doesn't work. But when it comes to the commons, when it comes to those things that we collectively all have a stake in, the survival of all of us, is our air clean, is our water pure, are our highways available to us, does our air traffic system work? The government's very efficient at doing these things and very effective at doing it. And so here we have the National Academy. And now what's particularly interesting about this, Tom Daschle says, this is doable. It's essential. This is, I believe, the single most important domestic issue facing our country. Bob Dole, who ran for president, the former Republican leader of the Senate, endorsed the National Academy of Sciences' call to action for national health insurance. He said, if properly framed, the lack of coverage for 43 million Americans can be one of the big, big issues in the election this year. And there you have it. And the Bush administration being one of the most poll-driven administrations in history, one of the most corrupt administrations in history, and certainly the most beholden to corporate interests administration that we have seen maybe since Ulysses S. Grant. I think that they exceed Ulysses S. Grant, whose administration, of course, was racked by the multiple railroad bribery scandals. This administration is never going to take a step that might shut down or reduce the size of the health insurance companies, or reduce the profitability of the pharmaceutical companies. Ain't going to happen. So anyhow, that's one of our headlines. This report in from the Borowitz report. President George W. Bush wanted to invade Iraq back when he was a college student at Yale University, a former fraternity brother of the president revealed today. I wasn't the least bit surprised when we attacked Iraq last year, says Charles Whiffy Whiffington, a Delta Kappa Epsilon brother of the president's in the late 1960s. Said Whiffy, this is something George has wanted to do since he was a freshman. Mr. Whiffington said that Mr. Bush first brought up the notion of regime change in Iraq during halftime at a Harvard-Yale football game in New Haven. Yale had just pulled ahead of Harvard by a field goal, Mr. Whiffington remembered, and George turned to me and said, Whiffy, Saddam's got to go. Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. It goes on. Within a span of 20, but let's get to the economy. Now, first of all, let me say, the health care thing I think is part of the economy. It's part of this whole issue. That one of the things that is really killing small business in America right now, or certainly hurting it, and an area where it causes big business to have a competitive edge, is that a lot of big corporations can afford to self-insure, or they get really cheap insurance rates, and small and medium-sized businesses can't, and they're being devastated by the cost of health insurance for their employees, and as a result of that, increasing numbers of them are dropping insurance for employees. Which makes them less competitive in the job market with big companies. I mean, this is just another form of the consequences of monopoly, the reasons why we should be enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, which Reagan suspended and was never revived, frankly. I mean, he didn't suspend it. It's still on the books, but he suspended enforcement of it, leading to the mergers and acquisition frenzy of the 80s and the Reagan recession. You'll note, we'll get to that. Anyhow, within a span of 24 hours, President Bush attempted twice to mislead the public, the American people, about the economy and his tax policies, says misleader.org. The president said, quote, unemployment dropped to 5.7%, which is a positive sign that the economy is getting better. What he forgot to mention was that drop happened because 309,000 people lost their unemployment benefits and therefore were no longer counted. As one nonpartisan economist said, most of those dropouts would still be in the labor force looking or trying to look for work if the economy were doing better. President Nate made no mention of the total of only 1,000 jobs created in December, a shockingly low number, where his economists had been predicting 150,000. Remarkable. We'll get to the second mislead right after this. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. It's 20 after the hour.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. Oh. You'll sleep like
okay up there.
You'll sleep like
need
a
more tissues.
Sleep like a
cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh. So you'll wear that red nightie?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stubby head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Cool, cool, glad you made it. Welcome to the world of entertainment. It's unlike any other game around. Cool, cool, glad you made it. Welcome to the world of entertainment. I hope you're ready, cause they're gonna knock it down, down, down.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. The second deception, by the way, the following day after George Bush said, aren't these stats wonderful? The unemployment rate dropped by 0.2% without telling people that the reason why it dropped was because 309,000 people got dumped off the unemployment rolls because their benefits had expired. The following day, the president touted the same economic policies that helped create the unemployment crisis. This being his outrageous tax deferral scheme, which they refer to as tax relief or tax cut, but in fact is a deferral of taxes from today into the future. These taxes are still going to have to be paid because George Bush is still spending the money. Anyhow, here's the despite the bad economic news, he said, quote, tax relief has got this economy going again. Yeah, it's like... you know, if I give you a credit card with $1 million balance, $1 million worth of line of credit on it and say, go out and live as well as you can, you're going to look like you're living pretty good. That's what he's done, only it's not $1 million. It's been more like several trillion dollars. Anyhow, every American who pays income tax got a tax cut, he said. His use of the phrase income tax, however, was tailored to divert attention, and his use of every American is just, you know, deceptive, to divert attention from the millions of low-income American taxpayers who pay payroll tax but not income tax and who receive nothing. In fact, 31% of all families in America got nothing from Bush's tax cut. Absolutely nothing, and they're still paying payroll taxes. You won't see a mention of payroll taxes on Rush Limbaugh's website, for example, by the way, because if you earn over $81,000 a year, you stop paying payroll tax. But if you earn only $5,000 a year, you pay the full load. It's one of the most regressive taxes out there. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Mark in Dallas has some thoughts on this topic. Hey, Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, I have time. Two quick comments on you coming up on a break. On the jobs report, there was an interesting statistic buried in the bottom of that. And during November-December time frame, the big box retailers last year actually cut 38,000 retail positions.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought that was interesting. Are you the fellow who just sent me the thing about J.P. Morgan Stanley?
Yes, sir, I did.
And Bank One? Okay, you want to tell our listeners about that?
Well, apparently, as a result of the merger between J.P. Morgan and Bank One, announced today that 10,000 positions are going to be eliminated.
Yeah. Yeah, you've been sending me these things right along, and I've been kind of aggregating them, thinking I'd do a show on them. I'm thinking now that every day we should just read one of them, because the news yesterday, or not yesterday, it's this morning here from today's Vermont, Burlington Free Press, Burlington, Vermont, the biggest city in Vermont, Montpelier-based National Life Group. National Life is the biggest employer in this town outside of the state government here in Montpelier, the state capital. Is going to outsource 158 National Life employees. And here it says, under the new contract, up to 65 jobs will be handled at a technology center in India.
Amazing.
National Life officials said the move was necessary to keep the company competitive. Hiring Keene is estimated to save $20 million over 5 years. And the company CEO says, in order to continue our profitable growth and remain competitive, it's imperative that we focus our resources. Yeah. See, the problem is that from the viewpoint of the companies, this is true. What we need is we need to go back to what we had for 215, 210 years, more or less, in the United States, where you have selective tariffs. You say, cool, you want to hire somebody to do IT work? That's a $50,000 a year job. If you want to hire somebody in India to do it, you're welcome to do that. You pay them $5,000. But when you do, you're going to have to pay the government a tax of $45,000. So you still have a $50,000 expense. Now, it's going to cost you $50,000 whether you buy it in India or you buy it here. Which do you want to do? And people and businesses will start making rational decisions. But you have to put it in the context of, hey, it's a business decision. Do it this way or do it that way. Mark, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, sharing those statistics with me. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Scientists are starting to pay more attention to cool coral. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of coral reefs grow in the warm waters of the tropics, but scientists are starting to find more coral in very different environments. They're finding it in water that's cold, deep, and sometimes very far north. Bob Stone is a marine ecologist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and he works out of a laboratory near Juneau, Alaska. He's documented an expanse of coral organisms near the Aleutian Islands in more than 1,000 feet of water. Stone says people have known for years that coral grew in those waters. Commercial fishing operations routinely dragged pieces of it to the surface in fishing gear. But no one knew what the seascape looked like until the summer of 2002. That's when Stone rowed to the seafloor in a small research submarine and took pictures.
I said it reminded me very much of places that I've been to in the tropics, and it did, both in terms of the colors and the structure of the corals. You know, some of them are low-lying, some of them are high, some of them look like trees, some look like bushes. So it truly looked like a tropical seascape to me. Most of them are orange, of course. That seems to be the predominant color for a lot of our sea life in these northern latitudes. I'm not really sure why, but there were other colors too, you know, some greens and purples and even some blue sponges and stuff.
Stone says the ocean bottom was like a vast, colorful garden. He routinely uses the term coral garden to distinguish these environments from coral reefs that form in much warmer water. The cool corals are fragile and grow slowly, and people are worried that they're being seriously damaged by fishing gear. Stone and his colleagues dove about 60 times in their survey of the Aleutian Islands. He says they saw damage from fishing gear on about half of those excursions. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Zone. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Is the Bush administration putting us on a collision course with a train wreck? See, this is the interesting thing. The size of the U.S. economy is $10.9 trillion. We have an import We export about $1 trillion worth of stuff. We import $1.5 trillion worth of stuff. And there's some real significant details around this that two actually excellent articles in yesterday's Wall Street Journal got into in some depth that I would like to share with you to kind of put these things in context, what's actually going on and how it's happening and what kind of risks it presents to us and why the administration would do it. I mean, what kind of good outcome they're trying to accomplish and what kinds of risks are inherent in that as opposed to other ways that it could be done. The other way it would be done, of course, would involve having to walk away from WTO, GATT, and NAFTA, which, of course, is the international globalization of power in the hands of multinational corporations rather than nation states. And because George W. Bush dances to the tune of multinational corporations, he's not going to do that. But anyhow, Phil in Florida is on the line. Hey, Phil, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's up?
Hi. Look, I've got great news for people.
Okay.
People probably remember a guy who was always on every talk show from CNN to NBC to Fox News to whatever. He was the one that, you know, that kept trying to, with lawsuits and everything else, trying to say, you know, that Clinton had Vince Foster killed. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He was the head of an organization called Media Watch or something Media,
Judicial
and he saw liberalism everywhere. And
oh yeah, yeah. Okay.
And his name was Reed Irvine.
Yeah.
And undoubtedly, during this campaign in the next.
Reed Irvine had a stroke recently.
Yeah,
I'm sure
he would have been a guest on a lot of shows, telling everybody how the media is supporting this Democrat or that Democrat.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is Reed Irvine's not going to be on TV during this presidential election year because Reed Irvine had a massive stroke.
Yeah.
God finally punished him for his lies.
Now, just to say, no, it's not God punishing Reed Irvine. Number one, how does it benefit us in any way to delight in somebody else's misery? And number two, I'm telling you, if Reed Irvine goes down, there's 3,000 standing in line to take corporate money and shill for them. I mean, this is like saying, you know, impeach Bush to get rid of the problem. The problem isn't Bush. The problem is the entire conservative mindset.
Well,
and that can only be defeated by education. We have to wake people up.
The longest trip is begun by the first step forward. And I think the fact that this guy is going to be off the air and will not
factor. They'll just replace him with somebody just as good at spinning as he was. And come on, Phil, you're a rational guy. You know that there's no shortage of folks who will shill for these guys.
Well, I'm still delighted the guy is out of the box.
Yeah, well, you know,
I'm
sorry, I can't share your delight. I think anybody has a stroke, it's a tragedy. Who knows? I mean, maybe he couldn't afford health insurance. Who knows?
Well, this guy was a liar.
Yeah, I understand. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. He didn't agree with us, and you know, whether he was a liar or not, certainly I saw him say things that I thought were not true. But that, anyhow, Nathan in Maryland is on the line with something about job outsourcing. Hey, Nathan, what's up?
Hi there, Tom. I just wanted to comment about your earlier discussion about outsourcing jobs to India and how it relates to the larger question of your show today, which is what does the Bush administration hope to accomplish that is good? And, you know, it's just like you've said, I subscribe to your hypothesis that this is a return to feudalism. And that's what they hope to achieve. They hope to roll back every advance that labor has made over the last 100 years to provide us with a decent standard of living for the rest of our species. You know, not just for the guys at the top. And the guys at the top, who of course support Bush, are just encouraging us to relinquish all of the rights that we've fought so hard to get, you know, the right to have a decent home, to send our children to school, to have health insurance. Now, basically what they're saying is, you as an American, unless you're willing to revert to serfdom, basically just wage slavery, we're just going to go to somebody who is willing to be a wage slave. And they're in India.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We saw this in 60 Minutes just last week. It was incredible. You know, these people, they're lined up around the block because they're starving, and they will do anything
sure,
for $5,000. And, you know, if they don't follow the company line right to the end, they'll just fire them, put somebody else there who will.
So, and I guarantee you right now in China, there's a bunch of people who are studying English and trying to get rid of their Chinese accent so that they can compete with the Indians.
Of course. And all this is just to make sure that, you know, more wealth goes to the top and that the rest of us are really of no value other than just being a machine to produce wealth for
I agree.
These
now, here's the problem.
Wealthy people.
Yeah, and here's the problem, Nathan, in how it's set up. The problem is that a corporation like Vermont Life here, which is a very well thought of company, they do when our local bus company that carried people between a couple of little towns here in central Vermont went bankrupt, Vermont Life actually ran the bus for free for about 8 months until another company got its act together. I mean, you know, it was mismanaged, the first one. And they're very much a part of this local community. They've been very active in the community. They're viewed as a good neighbor. They're a huge employer. I mean, I don't know how many people are working up there, but it's probably halfway to 1,000, maybe more. And this is in a town of 9,600 people, right, Montpelier, Vermont. And yet, today now, they're saying that they're going to send these jobs to India because they're being forced to. The reality is that because of the way that the rules of the game are set, and the rules of the game are established not by business, but by government, by we the people. We set up the rules of the game. The rules of the game right now are set up in such a way that if you're going to be in a particular industry where jobs can be quickly and easily outsourced, if you want to be competitive, if you want to survive, you have to do the same thing. And what we're going to see is this stampede offshore. And so what we need to do is change the rules of the game. And the Bush administration has been trying to do that one way, and I'm suggesting that they should do it another way. Let me get into that rant. Did you want to make a final point, Nathan, or was that...
No. I just wanted to... I just thought that was interesting. And it's strange to me why people are not moving to protect their middle-class status.
Yeah.
Now, they just... I think that we're part of it, too, because, you know, we look at our 401ks and we're like, the stock's up or down, you know, I'm going to be able to retire or not based on how well Chevron does, you know?
Yeah, those folks who are fortunate enough to have a 401k, I mean, you know, it's not everybody. Anyhow, Nathan, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Here's our quote for the day, by the way, from Thomas Jefferson in a letter to James Madison on September 6, 1789. He said, "But with respect to future debt," speaking of the nation, "it would not be wise and just for the nation to validly contract more debt than they may pay off within their own age or within a term of 19 years, which is what he considered to be one generation." And George Bush has certainly gone well beyond that. See, now here's the risk. Here's the starting point. This from the front page of yesterday's Wall Street Journal. "After a huge default, Argentina squeezes small bondholders," is the title of the article by Matt Moffitt. "And in the midst of a brutal recession, Argentina halted payments on its $88 billion in bonds in late 2001. Now, see, this is what happened. Argentina had gotten into debt like crazy because the IMF and the World Bank had been encouraging them to borrow and spend, borrow and spend, borrow and spend, just like we are doing right now. And they got in such deep debt. I mean, you know, it's the fifth largest economy or the third largest economy, one of the other. Yes, the third largest economy in Latin America. But it's still not as large as the American economy. So $88 billion is an enormous amount of money in Argentina. And they got so far in debt that they couldn't pay the interest on their debt. Now, the interest on our debt, we're hitting $7 trillion. We're looking at interest payments of between $300 and $500 billion a year right now. I mean, that you think about the you know what that means. It's just absolutely mind-boggling. That's literally several million full four-year college scholars. That's you know healthcare insurance for and that's just the interest payments that we're paying. Well, Argentina couldn't pay the interest, and so in 2001 they said to their bondholders, most of whom were foreign. They were small investors in Italy, mostly in Europe, Italy and Spain and countries in Europe where the currencies, the Italian, when Italy went from the lira to the euro, their currency, their bonds did start, they were not paying as well. So people switched to Argentinian bonds because Argentina was paying a high interest rate because they had to get people to borrow to take their debt. Well, anyhow, they said $88 billion, we're not going to pay. Late in 2001. And now they're offering to pay these bondholders 25 cents on the dollar. In other words, Argentina has gone through bankruptcy. I was down in Buenos Aires, a year and a half, 2 years ago, and it's amazing. You talk to people, just the depth of the disaster that was brought onto Argentina by these severe conservative economic policies that were played out in that state. And the last time this happened, Germany, after World War II, got a 77% write-down on their debt. Of course, they were bombed back to the Stone Age in many places. In the early 1990s, it all came crashing down. It was December of 2001 in Argentina when this happened. And now there's been a change of government, and they've got a guy in there who's a little more liberal, and he's saying, hey, we're going to put this thing together, but I'm sorry, we just can't pay all these folks back. So that's one possible future for America, is if we couldn't pay these things back. Now, there's two ways to deal with this problem of our jobs leaving, which is eviscerating our middle class. It's wiping out the middle class. It's turning the middle class into the working poor in the United States. And we have roughly 10 million people unemployed, and we have somewhere between 10 and 40 million people who are underemployed. Nobody knows because nobody keeps statistics, but there's pretty good measurements out there of the number of manufacturing jobs that have gone over the last 15 or 20 years and been replaced by Walmart jobs. And one part of the solution, of course, is to unionize, is to organize labor in the United States. And that then gives labor political power so that they can suggest or force at the legislative level the second solution. Now, there's two ways to deal with this. One is to make your country's currency worth less relative to other countries, so it costs more. You know, if we can hire an Indian worker for a dollar an hour, and it costs $10 an hour here in the United States, if we can reduce the value of a dollar down to 10 cents, then there's parity. Now, we're not going to do that. This is what Bush is trying to do. He's trying to do it. He's reduced but it's not working. Here, this from the Wall Street Journal yesterday, dollar's decline has little impact on import prices. The falling dollar has not yet done what it's supposed to do. While the drop in the currency is causing increased pain in Europe, it has yet to narrow the gaping U.S. trade deficit. This article by Greg Ipp on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Some economists say it will take more time and a bigger decline in the dollar to shrink the trade deficit. It could happen much more quickly, of course, if foreign investors become reluctant to finance the deficit and sell U.S. stocks and bonds, driving up interest rates and weakening the U.S. economy. And if that happens, interest rates go up, and then housing interest rates go up, and then you're going to see a crash in the housing market, and you're going to see the whole house of cards is going to come down, which is what Alan Greenspan is dancing as fast as he can to prevent avoiding. In that same time period, import prices. We're saying that there's no inflation, right? Well, because we're not including our inflation indexes has become irrelevant. And then it goes on to point out China, a supplier of a growing share of U.S. imports, has kept its currency, the yuan, from rising against the dollar through massive purchases of dollars, which it has invested in U.S. Treasury bonds. If they stop buying our bonds, we are in trouble. Isn't it incredible that the Bush administration has put us in a position where we are dependent upon China for our economic health? Now, the old rule of thumb, according to this article, was that 50% of a decline in the dollar would get passed through to consumers within a year. In other words, we've seen a 30% drop in the dollar, so there should be a 15% increase in inflation. Now it's more like 30%. To quickly wipe out the U.S. trade deficit would require the dollar to fall three times as much as it already has. And this is because these other currencies are trying to balance, countries are trying to balance against our currency. Anyway, the bottom line here is you can either reduce the value of your currency and make imports more expensive and exports cheaper, which is an across-the-board thing that just throws incredible disequilibriums, and then you get countries who figure out how to game the system. Or you can simply say, hey, if it costs a buck worth of labor to make a pair of shoes, and you're going to put 10 cents worth of that labor into it in Malaysia, you're going to pay a 90 cent tariff, a tax, when you import those things into the United States, so that we're leveling the playing field of labor. And you decide what you want that to be at a domestic level, and then you level it with other nations. And you can do that whether the job is done here or whether it's done there. It's a very straightforward process. Anyhow, I've been on this rant. Kent from Vernon Hills, Illinois. Kent, I'm sorry, we've got about 30 seconds. I can hold you over the break if you want, but is it quick?
I'd like to do that, Tom.
Okay, great. In that case, let me just wrap this up. This is called imposing tariffs. This has been the law in the United States from 1785 up until basically when we signed WTO and GATT and NAFTA. And it's time for us to go back to some rational trade policy rather than this irrational, let the corporations decide everything. They call it the free market. It's not a free and it's not the market. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to ieamericaradio.com. I'll be there.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. According
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them. They are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday, from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
So they're coming to take me away, ha-ha.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I get up each morning and dust off my wits, open the paper and read the obits. If I'm not in there, I know I'm not dead, so I eat a quick breakfast and go back to bed. And how do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go just got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up is then.
Welcome back. Our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 511-6227. And by the way, our second hour of the day, normally on Thursday, is our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. And today, because of the schedule conflict, we're moving that to the third hour of today's program. For those stations that play our third hour, you will hear the Republican candidate who is running against George Bush in the primaries. Bet you didn't know there was one. He's going to be on. So, anyhow, Kent was on the line here from Vernon Hills, Illinois. Hey, Kent, welcome back.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Great. What's up?
Tom, you said, you know, education is the answer, educating the voter. There's a great reluctance, though, on the part of the voter to be educated, and that's why Republicans have had the successes that they've had.
I disagree. I would say that what's been happening for the last 15 years is that right-wing radio has been very effectively educating voters in their
way of
thinking.
Being educated.
Well, depending on how you mean educated. I mean, they're being misinformed. They're being lied to very often. I think people really want to try to understand things.
When you can tell people twice that when you cut taxes, revenues to the Treasury go up, and have them believe it. And then immediately after they do this, I mean, Reagan did it, and we had a disaster. This guy has done it. And I used to work for a large public university in this country. I had colleagues with me who couldn't wait to get their tax cut because they were thinking how well we were going to do. Well, guess what? You got your $600 if you're married. You got your $600 back. And their kids' college tuition went up by $3,000. And people don't connect the dots.
Yeah, well, Howard Dean is out there ranting about that. I mean, the other candidates talk about it occasionally, but he's made that, you know, the core. There was no middle class tax cut, and Joe Lieberman's going, how can you say that?
I had students who were telling me that they think the fairest thing would be for us to just have a flat tax. Well,
That's nuts. That's the most regressive of all taxes, as you know, Kent. Ken, thanks for the call. We're at the end of the hour here. But a good point, well made. Thank you for the call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Come on.
I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name Carly.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. A winter storm packing fierce winds, frigid temperatures, and snow pounded the east on Thursday, causing fender benders and traffic woes, as well as dangerous cold. Temperatures weren't expected to rise out of the single digits Thursday throughout much of the northeast, where Watertown, New York dropped to 31 below zero, and the morning wind chill was minus 46 degrees. Maine Governor John Baldacci declared a civil emergency after wind chills of 30 to 50 below zero a day earlier. The heaviest snow of the storm fell in Minnesota to Michigan, where strong winds produced blizzard-like conditions in parts of the Great Lakes and upper Midwest. The European Union, risking fresh tensions with Washington, on Thursday asked for the go-ahead to slap trade sanctions on the United States just as efforts get underway to revive global commerce talks. The EU was set to be joined in its request, lodged with the Geneva-based WTO, later on Thursday by 9 nations including Japan, China, Brazil, India, and South Korea. The sanctions, which could run into the hundreds of millions of dollars for duties on U.S. goods, aim to force Washington to revoke a scheme under which local companies benefit when anti-dumping duties are imposed on foreign competitors. Carol Moseley Braun plans to end her White House bid Thursday, leaving an all-male field for the presidency and giving her support to Democratic frontrunner Howard Dean. Braun was to officially endorse the former Vermont governor Thursday afternoon during an appearance at Carroll High School in Carroll, Iowa, said Dean campaign manager Joe Trippi. Dean said Wednesday that he welcomed the endorsement of the former senator from Illinois. Trippi said Braun approached Dean after a recent debate and told him she was considering leaving the race and backing him. More IE America Radio Network news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
No one ever confused the Fairfax County Jail with a motel, but they now have something in common. Both require you to pay to stay. Fairfax Sheriff Stan Barry announced Tuesday that effective immediately, prisoners at the Adult Detention Center are paying $1 a day to help defray the cost of their keep. The money will be deducted from individual accounts established when inmates are brought to the jail. Any cash they have on them is placed in their account and can be used for such things as haircuts, which cost $5. There is also a jail commissary that sells snacks. Prisoners that come in without any money and do not get any from relatives or friends will not be penalized. For IE America Radio Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cassie, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
When you hear a highly paid athlete say about a new contract, it's not about the money. You can bet it's about the money. Likewise, when you hear a corporate chieftain say about a new advertising campaign, it's not meant to be intrusive. You can bet it's meant to be very intrusive. Indeed, the very idea of advertising is to intrude into your head, doing whatever it takes to get there and plant a brand name like some alien pod of commercialization. Take the exec who made the not-intrusive assertion. He's a Toyota honcho, and he just ponied up $100 million for branding rights to the basketball stadium in Houston. That means that this taxpayer-built facility will now be called the Toyota Center. It'll be covered inside and out with Toyota's logo and ads. Its lounge will be named Lexus Lounge. Its parking garage will be named for Toyota's Tundra trucks. It will have Toyota vehicles positioned prominently throughout the arena. And there will be a Toyota sales office at the games, staffed with sales reps hawking the cars. But at least, it's not meant to be intrusive. Then there's the brand new public monorail system in Las Vegas. Its naming rights are being sold to corporations that'll plaster the place with their logos and ads as though they own it. First to buy into this monorail was Nextel, the phone huckster. It'll have one of the system's trains covered with its corporate colors, name, logo, and promos. One of the monorail's main stops will be named the Nextel Station, complete with a store and a Nexpert bar staffed with employees promoting products. Yet Nextel's VP for marketing says, "I'm sensitive to the issue of over-commercialization." Yeah, like a hog is sensitive to overeating. You want sensitive? The ad agency peddling the people's monorail says it doesn't see the system as transportation, but as transportainment. This is Jim Hightower saying, "Take me now, Lord. I've lived too long."
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Ralph Nader reeling from the backlash. Interesting article here in yesterday's Wall Street Journal. Nearly 4 years, this is by Stephen Power, nearly 4 years after Mr. Nader's last presidential campaign, organizations affiliated with the consumer watchdog are reeling from a backlash from one-time supporters. Basically, what's happened here is that groups like Public Citizen, which Ralph Nader founded, they're actually talking about taking his name off their letterhead. Because after the 2000 election, their contributions dropped by $1 million, 8% of their budget, and they lost 20% of their members. Because so many people are so angry with Ralph Nader. And here's this guy who's saying, "Well, maybe I'll run again." It's going to be really interesting. The Aviation Consumer Project, Mr. Nader founded in the 1970s, group lost some of its biggest donors after the 2000 election. As a result, the organization had to shutter its Washington office and eliminate its two salaried staff jobs. Similarly, the Center for Auto Safety, which Mr. Nader founded in 1970 to act as a watchdog for motorist rights, lost about 5,000 members, roughly a quarter of its membership, following his 2000 election stunt. Very interesting. If he had only taken Michael Moore's advice and at the last minute said, "Hey, guys, if you live in a state where it's going to be close, and here's a list of the states, don't vote for me, vote for Al Gore." All would be well with Ralph Nader. In fact, he would probably be our Secretary of Transportation or something like that. But instead, he's the angry guy on the outside. By the way, the Washington, D.C. primary, I meant to mention this yesterday, and I just got carried away by the stream of events. The Washington, D.C. primary, day before yesterday, Howard Dean won by 43%. Now, Al Sharpton had 34%. This is the Washington, D.C. primary was why Al Sharpton went after Howard Dean, playing the race card, as they say. And because he was hoping that he could win the Washington, D.C. primary, which has a large minority population, and it would give him, you know, some national stature and perhaps propel him to bigger and better things. I thought, frankly, it was a cheap shot, but you know, there are some people who think it's a legitimate issue. They don't live in Vermont, but it's anyhow. But the reality is that Sharpton took 34%, Carol Mosley Brown took 12%, and everybody else, Kucinich had 10%, everybody else was in single digits. But Howard Dean took 43%, which has to take some of the wind out of Mr. Sharpton's sails. And then today, Carol Mosley Braun announced that she is withdrawing from the race. And I don't know if she's done it yet. I haven't been monitoring the news for the last 2 or 3 hours. But she apparently is going to throw her support behind Howard Dean. She's going to endorse Howard Dean. So, interesting times, interesting things going on. What about this conservative? I want to start dealing on various days of the week with conservative myths. And we would just take them one at a time, you know, devote a bit of an hour to one. And I should say, if there are other things that are on your mind that you think our listeners should know about or you want to talk about, you're welcome to call 1-800-TALK. Yes, 1-800-825-5937. But this is one that I think is really worth approaching. The conservative myth is nature is savaged. It's based on dominance, not sharing. That's why it's natural to beat another human being down. That's why the rich conquer the poor. That's why business is war. That's why hierarchy is normal. This, by the way, I saw the Lord of the Rings, the third movie, a couple weeks ago when our kids were here for Christmas, and we went to see that movie. And I don't know if you caught it, but the message of the movie at the very end was that the person who is greatest in battle against evil, the warlord or the warrior who is the most violent and most effective with his violence on behalf of us, should be the king. There was no election at the end of Lord of the Rings. There was a coronation. It was, now you could say, well, there was a consensus of the people. He was such a good guy. Yeah, sure. But it was set up in an aristocratic context. So what if his son's not such a good guy, but his son now is the prince who's going to become the king? Because this thing was framed as a kingdom. And it was written by Tolkien, who was British. And he apparently wanted to go back to pre-parliamentary days. Back before the Great Reformation, you know. So, the message of the movie was one of dominance and hierarchy. We have so many of these messages in our culture, we just kind of take it for granted. You know, yeah, it's, you know, greed is good because it's like, you know, not just greed. There's a real important distinction here. Competition in business or in anything else, in soccer, in football, in baseball, competition is where you play within the rules and you try to beat the other guys by being better than them. Warfare is where you try to destroy the other guys and then eat their lunch, right? The spoils of war. We take Iraq, we get to sell their businesses to our buddies who are our campaign contributors. We get their oil. We won. Now, this distinction between war and competition, first of all, is increasingly becoming blurred in American business. And that's one of the reasons why historically there have been rules to the game. But it's grounded, but increasing, you know, there's so many people who subscribe to this mythos, which is fundamental to the conservative worldview. You go back and read Russell Kirk's 1953 or 54 book, The Conservative Mind, the one that jump-started the whole modern-day conservative movement, which really goes back to Edmund Burke, who said that it wouldn't be appropriate, this was in the late 18th century, it wouldn't be appropriate for a hairdresser or a tallow maker, candle maker, to be among the ruling class, to have any say in government at all. Edmund Burke was very outspoken, and Russell Kirk says you have to have classes in your society, and there's a class of people who should be leading. And you'll notice, you know, in the Bush administration, the cabinet is entirely multimillionaires. Bush is a multimillionaire. I think it's funny when, not even funny, actually, I was astounded when I saw a news report some months ago where they said, George Bush has a lot in common, or Howard Dean has a lot in common with George Bush. They both came from wealthy backgrounds. I mean, Howard Dean's, the background he comes from is worth maybe $5 million, maybe 10 at the most. The background he his personal wealth worth is maybe 1 or 2 or 3 million, and most of that is his house, you know, and property and things. But and I don't even think it's that much, frankly. And that's not unusual among families where you have two physicians in them, for example. But George W. Bush, I mean, he comes from a family dynasty worth hundreds of millions. Over, you know, multiple generations, his grandfather, Prescott Bush, was the senator from Connecticut, was the head of the Union Banking Corporation, which got shut down by Roosevelt for trading with Hitler in 1944. And, you know, while we were at war with Hitler under the Trading with the Enemy Act and all that sort of stuff. But it's a long dynasty. But I digress. The idea is that hierarchy is normal. And it turns out, you know, some scientists got into this. And it turns out that just isn't the case among most animals. And it's also, if you look at anthropology, it's not the case among humans. Among Native American communities, for example, by and large, it wasn't an issue of dominance. The Shoshone tribe that occupied much of what is Nevada today had achieved a singular accomplishment that was not uncommon among tribal people. As Peter Farb says, Peter Farb wrote Man's Rise to Civilization, one of the most brilliant anthropological studies of Native American cultures. You know, Farb was he's dead now. The book came out in 1967. And just an absolutely brilliant book. He said the Shoshone did not engage in warfare. They didn't even have a word for it in their language. He goes on to say, the Shoshone did not wage war because it served no purpose. They had no desire to gain military honors, for these were meaningless in their kind of society. They had no territories to defend, for a territory is valuable only when it's producing food. And those were precisely the times when the Shoshone cooperated rather than made war. And, you know, there were other types of tribes, in addition to the Shoshone, and he tells the story. There's one group that had a class called the Stinkards. They had four classes. It was like a caste system. And the Stinkards were at the bottom, and they always had to marry into one of the top ones. So you had this continual social mobility that was built into the culture. But anyhow, the modern-day conservatives are still trying to cast this thing as this is how it should be. Joseph Ellis, in his biography of Thomas Jefferson, he says, the Jeffersonian magic works because we permit it to function in a rarefied region where real-life choices do not have to be made. And this is echoing the conservative belief that democracy is magic and rarefied, that it's not real, that it's being held together with, you know, glue and rubber bands. But nature tells us otherwise. They've done the research. Now, in England, a couple of scientists, Tim Roper and L. Conrad at the School of Biological Sciences, University of Sussex, England, have done the research, and they said, we're projecting our own vision of despotism onto animals. They said, actually, what happens is that animals vote. Animals survive by democracy. It's really fascinating. They say, here's a variation on it. Tim Roper told me, he says, you get a dozen people in a committee room, and eventually somebody will start shuffling around and shuffling their papers, and then others do, and eventually somehow a collective decision gets made to end the meeting. That's the sort of situation we're talking about, and it's how animals decide which way to go. And he said you can see it from social insects like bees. The queen bee isn't actually in charge of the hive. To chimpanzees, he says, you can't imagine a chimpanzee surviving on its own because it needs social companions to help protect it from predators, to tell it where the food is. And individuals are highly dependent on being a member of a social group, and so are we. And yet the libertarian and conservative philosophy is me, mine, I only. And we forget the context in which we live, and we do so at our peril. At the peril of democracy, at the peril of our individual health, ultimately. This is Tom Hartman. Hey, Joe in Santa Fe, Brian in New Hampshire, hold on the line. I'll pick you up on the other side of this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. Uh-huh. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world, books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and I'm being corrected by the folks in our chat room, and this is great. If you want to drop in for live chat while we're on the air, just go to TomHartman.com and click the chat room link. There's one at the top of the page, one on the side of the page. They take you to the same place, which is a forum in CompuServe. And just drop into chat room number 3. It's labeled the Tom Hartman Radio Program. And there you will find the conversation. And the point that somebody made is that I was saying Aragorn was crowned because he was the bloodthirstiest or the strongest or the most powerful warlord, when in fact he was actually the rightful heir to the throne. And the point that I would make is, how did that throne begin? I mean, in British history, it began in 1066 with the Battle of Hastings, the biggest warlord, right? The bloodiest battle. The thrones exist because somebody rose up and used violence against other people and said, okay, now I'm in charge. And that, it turns out, is not the normal way that nature organizes itself. And historically, it's not the way humans have organized themselves. When you look at tribal people all around the world who have been doing this by trial and error for hundreds of thousands of years, it's almost never organized that way. Our way of our idea of hierarchical and dominance, of hierarchy and dominance, which you see played out in dictatorships all around the world, there's 43 of them left now, is the dysfunctional experiment, the broken experiment. The true state of humans and animals is democracy. Now, that rant finished. We've got Joe in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, Joe, you noted the soldier's suicide story. I had that yesterday. I didn't get to it. That's a tough one, isn't it?
Yes, it's disgusting. And you know what? What's even sadder is some of these parents of these kids are so proud because they died for their country.
Yeah. It is. I don't have the clip in front of me. Do you have the statistics on that? My recollection was it was something like 1 out of every 7 soldiers who's died in Iraq died from suicide.
Right. Some of them that have returned have killed their wives and themselves.
Yeah. Well, that was the big case where there was like 3 or 4 of those in a cluster.
Yeah.
That was right after the Gulf War. That was some years ago. But they're concerned that that may happen again. I mean, you take young, impressionable people and you teach them how to be violent and you put them in a situation where they take the lives of other people and where they feel continuously threatened in a situation where they literally have to kill others. And then you bring them back and say, now don't do that anymore. And, you know, it can be undoing training is a difficult thing. And a lot of them, you know, the dissonance of being brought up told killing is wrong and then being told to kill, you know, so we now have this incredibly high suicide rate. I think it's a little over 30. My recollection from the statistics, and again, Joe, you have it probably right in front of you, was it was like 13.4 per 100,000 in
right,
the military.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, which is about a third higher than in the regular population. Okay, Joe, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES, or number 1-800-825-5937. Brian in New Hampshire's on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I just want to quickly mention in the January 19th New Yorker, there's a piece by Ken Auletta about the Bush White House and its attitude towards the press and the Fourth Estate. It's called Fortress Bush.
Okay, is that the one that's on the stands now?
Yeah, I believe it, or it's just coming out. And it's really tells you a lot that they care nothing for any kind of questioning press, you know, with in any kind of a John Peter Zenger, I think, would be shot on sight at this White House.
Well, as they did to Helen Thomas. I mean, you know, the grand dame of American journalism, who always sat in the front and always asked the first question. And George Bush, after three and a half, 4 decades, put an end to that one. Brian, thanks for sharing that with us. I'll look for that New Yorker. 1-800-TALK-YES, if you'd like to be on. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Scientists are starting to pay more attention to cool coral. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of coral reefs grow in the warm waters of the tropics, but scientists are starting to find more coral in very different environments. They're finding it in water that's cold, deep, and sometimes very far north. Bob Stone is a marine ecologist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and he works out of a laboratory near Juneau, Alaska. He's documented an expanse of coral organisms near the Aleutian Islands in more than 1,000 feet of water. Stone says people have known for years that coral grew in those waters. Commercial fishing operations routinely dragged pieces of it to the surface in fishing gear. But no one knew what the seascape looked like until the summer of 2002. That's when Stone rode to the seafloor in a small research submarine and took pictures.
I said it reminded me very much of places that I've been to in the tropics, and it did, both in terms of the colors and the structure of the corals. You know, some of them are low-lying, some of them are high, some of them look like trees, some look like bushes. So it truly looked like a tropical seascape to me. Most of them are orange, of course. That seems to be the predominant color for a lot of our sea life in these northern latitudes. I'm not really sure why, but there were other colors too, you know, some greens and purples and even some blue sponges and stuff.
Stone says the ocean bottom was like a vast, colorful garden. He routinely uses the term coral garden to distinguish these environments from coral reefs that form in much warmer water. The cool corals are fragile and grow slowly, and people are worried that they're being seriously damaged by fishing gear. Stone and his colleagues dove about 60 times in their survey of the Aleutian Islands. He says they saw damage from fishing gear on about half of those excursions. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of our weaker citizens suffer an addiction to talk radio that causes them to listen to that Mike Malloy person each night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. We suggest you satisfy your Jones by listening to some of our morally upstanding, honest, and ethical talk show hosts like Dr. Laura, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, and Rush Limbaugh. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I ain't lived forever, but I've lived enough. And I've learned to be gentle, and I've learned to be tough. I found only two things that last till the end. One is your heroes, the others your friends.
And welcome back. Michael Moore, by the way. I got this email this morning. Michael Moore is endorsing Wesley Clark. And, you know, I think in some ways you could say he was responsible for Wes Clark running in the first place with his, you know, he met Wes Clark on an airplane and decided he liked the guy and started pushing him to run. And now he's really promoting this candidacy. Is Michael Moore a dupe, or does he know something we don't? Or you know, I mean, Wes Clark, I didn't think was a Democrat until just a few weeks ago. And Moore also, of course, supported Nader. Maybe he's out to destroy the Democrats? I doubt it. I think Michael Moore's a very good guy, and I respect his opinion. So it's causing me to have to rethink my thoughts on Wesley Clark. But, you know, time will tell. Anyhow, we were talking about the suicides. I just want to toss this in before we go to the phones. The Guantanamo Bay, this is an article by Louise Christian in The Guardian, Guantanamo Bay, a global experiment in inhumanities. And here you've got these people who are locked up. They're exposed to sensory deprivation. I mean, they're exposed to psychological torture. And the biggest torture of all is that they don't know if they'll ever get out. I mean, imagine being put in a jail and told that you're going to be there until the day you die. And you're in a 6x6 cage. And this isn't a jail where you have a TV set and you have a general population in the yard and you've got, you know, affinity groups and, you know, what any social contact. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And they point, as with all prisoners detained for an indeterminate period of time, their mental health is severely affected. And they talk about people being defined for psychiatric detention, the suicides that have happened there, the attempted suicides, the death of there's an investigation into the death of two prisoners in suspicious circumstances. They think it might have to do with their techniques of interrogating them, which include throwing hooded prisoners against cement walls. And they go on to say, it is of grave concern that the example being set by the U.S. and the United Kingdom. See, they got one of these Guantanamo Bay kind of places set up in the U.K., too. They've got 13 British residents locked up without trial in England right now and without access to a lawyer. Tony Blair has been doing what George Bush is doing. And now the rest of the world is saying, hey, we can do this. That's a great idea. If they can do that in America. The example of set by the U.S. and the U.K. is being used to legitimize repression internationally on an ever-increasing scale, from China, which has imprisoned up to 100 Chinese Muslims without trial, to and you can bet there's a million more, to Uzbekistan with over 1,000, Yemen 200 people, Morocco, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, India, and Indonesia. This alarming lead is being eagerly followed. All of these nations, since we set up Camp X-Ray, have set up their own versions of it and decided they don't need to offer people human rights. They don't need to offer people lawyers. They don't need to have due process. This is so wrong. This is so wrong. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Ruth in Orlando is on the telephone. Hey, Ruth, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Hey, quickly, there's two things, but the real first quick one is you were talking about the suicides, the soldiers that came back. You also mentioned briefly the soldiers that came back and murdered their wives, and you thought that was from the first Gulf War. That actually was at Fort Bragg last summer.
Right.
I think it was last summer, where these guys had returned from Afghanistan, and there was a string of four or five murders where special forces guys came back from Afghanistan, killed their wives, and killed themselves.
Thanks for correcting me. Time sometimes telescopes.
They were all special forces, I believe, and I wondered, you know, if a lot of times I think these guys, to get through some of these missions, are literally given amphetamines and other things to take, and I wondered if this was, you know, at the time I wondered if that was a residual effect of something like that, because it was odd to have a string of guys coming home and murdering themselves, their wives, and themselves. That was one. The other thing was, if you mentioned this and I missed it, I apologize, but have you heard about the Dick Cheney Halliburton investigation about the Nigerian bribes?
Yes, the French government, in fact, it's in my stack for today, I haven't gotten down to it yet.
I was prescient.
There you go. Is that how it's pronounced, by the way? I always thought it was prescient, but
I've never
heard it.
It is when I say it.
Okay, great. There's a judge in France who is talking about subpoenaing Dick Cheney and possibly even prosecuting him because France is a signatory with the United States to a treaty which makes bribery illegal, and Halliburton apparently had a $200-some-odd million slush fund that they used to bribe officials in Nigeria under the supervision of Dick Cheney. I mean,
And where did that false report about the uranium come out of?
Niger, not
uh-huh.
Nigeria. Two different countries.
Okay.
I think.
I thought they were the same.
Well, maybe they are, but I don't think so. I think Nigeria, I'm quite sure Nigeria is a separate country. But in any case, it's, the fact that the Vice President of the United States is on the verge of being indicted by the French. And this is all over the internet. It's readily available news. It's all over the newspapers in England. I mean, it's like screaming headlines. It was a headline on Le Figaro in France, which is the conservative newspaper. And, you know, the one that's less supportive of the French administration and more supportive of kind of Bush-type postures. And yet, I haven't seen it reported in any American newspapers or in any American radio or television stations yet, which is just astounding. But on the other hand, we do have David Frum and what's his name, Richard Pearl, writing a book saying that we should treat the French as if they were an enemy. And this book just came out a few weeks ago, and you wonder, you know, could there coincidence or conspiracy? Anyhow, Ruth, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-DOC-TALK. Yes, our number. David in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, David, what's up?
Well, I wanted to also comment on the suicide thing, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Vietnam veteran. And so I have had an experience of being in a war zone. And what is prominent to me in this whole thing is the energy of evil. I know that there's a lot of philosophical discussion about is man basically good, is man evil or whatever, does it exist?
Yeah.
When you're in a war zone, there's this huge energy that's bigger than any individual's ability to resist. You're swept up in something that I would call evil. And it's like if you had a rat that was dead in your wall and it was like stinking in your house for a long time,
mm-hmm.
it would, that's not a philosophical concept. That's a very real experience. And you have this fight inside of yourself when you're doing the bidding of evil. If you're trying to hang on to your goodness, it puts you in this kind of inner tussle with yourself. And the evil is so big and awful and real that perhaps the only way to resist it is to kill yourself.
Yeah.
And
that's very well said. My best friend, my very best friend that I grew up with, his first name was Clark, and I mean literally my best friend as I was growing up as a kid. During the Vietnam War, his draft number came up. He came back for Christmas and called me up and said he was having a really rough time. We were going to get together that weekend, and the night before we were going to get together, his wife called me all hysterical. He had shot himself in the head. He's dead. And he never said, I'm going to do this and this is why. But what you're describing sounds to me like what happened to Clark.
You're in that. It puts a taint on your soul.
Yeah.
And you feel, I'm speaking, I guess I shouldn't speak. I'll just speak for myself. I felt when I came back from Vietnam that this taint was somehow dangerous to other people. And it was only through the fact that I had some really good friends and was willing to go through a lot of emotions that I was able to come out the other side of it and understand it. But, you know, more Vietnam veterans have committed suicide than actually died in combat.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Although, you know, the background suicide rate in the United States is one of the highest in the world as well. I think we're just behind Japan as number two. And I don't know, maybe Vietnam vets are skewing those statistics. It would be interesting to know. I suspect it's because we have the most, the greatest disparity between extreme wealth and extreme poverty in the United States of any country in the developed world. And I suspect that that plays into it a lot. But, David, you make an excellent point. You're very eloquent in saying it. And this is why, I mean, imagine, David, what we are doing to these young men and women. I mean, we've lost 500, you say almost 500 people have died. Our soldiers have died in Iraq, you know, plus the suicides, one in seven being suicides. So we probably lost 700 or 800 people. And on top of that, you know, thousands have lost limbs. But on top of that, how many of them have been psychologically wounded in this terrible way that you describe by this? And for what? And for what? Well, to free 23 million or 35 million Iraqis. Well, okay, what about the 17 million Zimbabweans? What about the 1 billion Chinese? I mean, our national mission is not to run around the world shoving our way of life down people's throats with a barrel of a gun or a bomb. I mean, it's just not. Pardon my rant. Anyhow, David, thank you. Thanks for the call. I appreciate your comments, your kind comments. 1-800-TALK-YES. Bill in Ohio is on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Halfway through on equal protection, I recommend it to all your listeners.
Well, thank you.
I had two questions. The first one is kind of trivial, and if time is an issue, the second one is more important. But I've always wondered, what do you say to conservatives when they say that Reagan's spending brought down the Soviet Union? But the other
I
one,
say that the CIA itself refuted that. The there were all kinds of studies published back in the 80s indicating that the Soviet, going back to the 60s, frankly, that the Soviet Union was unsustainable. That they had it, that they were spending themselves into debt, as we are doing now. Mm-hmm. That people were not motivated. That the system where the government controlled the means of production and supply and distribution didn't work. It just didn't work. I visited the Soviet Union before it fell, and I visited East Berlin before the wall came down, and I can tell you it just wasn't working. It was falling apart. You didn't have to be a secret agent to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And Reagan, most of Reagan's defense funding did not go into things that intimidated the Soviet Union. He basically took about $1 trillion and borrowed it, created this enormous deficit for us, which we're still paying interest on, took about $1 trillion and gave it to his corporate buddies. George Shultz was the president or vice president of Bechtel Corporation, and mm-hmm. and Cap Weinberger was the other. One was, you know, I forget which one was president, which one was vice president. And for Star Wars, for R&D on Star Wars, which never happened. And so they say, well, Reagan increased defense spending and the Soviet Union fell. Well, you know, Reagan did this typical conservative giveaway to big corporations so that they'll give you huge campaign donations. And at the same time, the Soviet Union fell and there was no relationship between the two. And the CIA documented that very well.
Okay.
That's what I say to them.
Thanks for that, Tom. The other relates to what you've been talking about, and I'm curious about, like, the rise of conservative minds since, say, Russell Kurd. When you think of it, you've recently, I mean, today, described some of the suicides as sort of contextual. These people find themselves in horrifying circumstances. So,
yeah,
when you think of the rise of the conservative mind itself in America with the propensity for hierarchy, authority, say, greed and violence, do you think it is a contextual thing, or do you think there is something in the disposition of certain people that they tilt this way?
I think it's a multiple variables. We know that when people are in fear, that they're more likely to gravitate toward conservative worldviews or authoritarian worldviews. If mm-hmm. somebody's afraid and they feel powerless, then they want somebody powerful to protect them. And they're willing to submit to the authority of hierarchical systems in order to get that and abandon democracy. And that's one of the reasons why this administration has hyped the whole terror alert thing. We're on continuous terror alert. It's another terror alert. The terror alert is today. The terror alert is orange, and today it's a it's just if you can keep people scared, they will submit. That's one. The other is the idea of the nurturing parent versus the harsh parent. You know, there are some people who, because of the way they were brought up, think that authoritarian systems are best because they were brought up in a very authoritarian household, mm-hmm. and they just don't know anything else. They've never had the experience of anything that resembles democracy. And then there's this idea about judges and perceivers, but I find judges, Carl Jung's idea, I find judges among people on the left, I mean, in my opinion, mm-hmm. Ralph Nader's a super judger, just like George Bush is. They're on the opposite end of the spectrum, but they both have this absolutely black and white worldview, my way or the highway.
So I
think it's a multiple that.
I see. Yeah, tough question, huh? Thanks a lot for your thoughts, Tom.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Thanks for the call. 1-800-TALK-YES, and Don in Pontiac, Michigan. Don, we got about a minute left here.
Hello.
Hey, Don.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great.
I've never heard your show before. I love it.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'm on Sirius Satellite, and I was doing a bit of channel surfing, and this is great.
Well, we're here every day from noon to 3 Eastern time.
Okay, I will be listening more often then.
Great.
I wanted to comment on your comment about Michael Moore's endorsing Wesley Clark.
Okay, we've got about 20 seconds.
I think Michael Moore has become pragmatic, as you suggested earlier, that Nader should have been pragmatic.
Uh-huh. And you think he really thinks that Wes Clark has the best chance of beating George? I mean, that's basically what
right.
his emails.
And any Democrat would be better than this current occupant.
Yeah. Time will tell, and if Wes Clark can beat George Bush and he really is the person he represents himself to be now rather than the person he represented himself to be a year ago, I'm all in favor of it. We'll see. Thanks for the call, Don. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
you know, it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
D.W. Washburn.
I heard a sweet voice say,
D.W. Washburn.
This is your lucky day.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. One of the folks in our chat room, Donato9300, says, is it a coincidence that Cheney and Bush go out and blast pheasants out of the sky for fun? This kind of thing speaks volumes. Could be. I know some folks who are hunters who I don't consider particularly violent or crazy. I'm not one myself and have never been so inclined. In fact, the idea kind of repels me, but I think that there may be a you were raised that way kind of element to it, and there is the mythos of the American, you know, the Daniel Boone. Ken in Mount Clemens is on the line. Hey, Ken, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Did you happen to catch the Charlie Rose show last night?
I did not. I'm not up that late.
Well, I'm usually not either, but they said Michael Moore was going to be on. So he was the last guest, and he was on. He should have had about 15 minutes, and into it, it just licked off and went to a different Charlie Rose. They cut half of the interview right out.
Really?
It was the weirdest thing. I mean, I don't want to say it was like a conspiracy, but it was really strange how it just went off and then they put a different episode. But in there, he said not just Wesley Clark, that if, you know, if it didn't come down to him, that he actually thought any of the candidates were pretty good candidates, except I think he did mention one. I don't remember which one.
Lieberman.
Yes, what it was.
Anybody but Lieberman or Bush.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's good to know. And that's essentially what he said in his email this morning, is that he would support any Democrat against George Bush, any non-Lieberman Democrat against George Bush. But he felt that Wesley Clark was the most electable because he was a gun-loving general who came from the South, and that you've got to get the South, you've got to win the South. Interesting. Time will tell. We'll see if he's right. I think that a Clark Dean or a Dean Clark ticket could really do something. But, you know, who knows? I may be wrong, too. Ken, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, transforming the world by revitalizing American democracy.
Through a hole in the air from those Nazi Tiananmen.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Here she is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really Nancy?
Fantila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Carol Moseley Braun plans to end her White House bid Thursday, leaving an all-male field for the presidency and giving her support to Democratic frontrunner Howard Dean. Braun was to officially endorse the former Vermont governor Thursday afternoon during an appearance at Carroll High School in Carroll, Iowa, said Dean campaign manager Joe Trippi. Dean said Wednesday that he welcomed the endorsement of the former senator from Illinois. Trippi said Braun approached Dean after a recent debate and told him she was considering leaving the race and backing him. Tens of thousands of Shiite Muslims shouting "No to America" marched Thursday throughout Iraq to back their spiritual leader's call for early elections, a stand that could stymie a U.S. blueprint for transferring power to a new Iraqi administration. The peaceful demonstration in Basra, Iraq's second largest city, followed a string of violent incidents across the country, including a car bombing in Baqaba and a series of clashes between U.S. troops and insurgents that left 20 people dead. An estimated 20 to 30,000 Shiite Muslims turned out to support Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Husseini al-Sistani's demand that an interim legislature be elected directly and not chosen in provincial caucuses, as is called for under the American plan. A winter storm packing fierce winds, frigid temperatures, and snow pounded the east on Thursday, causing fender benders and traffic woes, as well as dangerous cold. Temperatures weren't expected to rise out of the single digits Thursday throughout much of the Northeast, where Watertown, New York dropped to 31 below zero and the morning wind chill was minus 46 degrees. Maine Governor John Baldacci declared a civil emergency after wind chills of 30 to 50 below zero a day earlier. The heaviest snow of the storm fell in Minnesota to Michigan, where strong winds produced blizzard-like conditions in parts of the Great Lakes and upper Midwest. More IE America Radio Network news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them.
Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
A rural Montana man says he was upset with a car full of teens who played their music too loud, but he was the one punished for turning the volume up. The Montana Supreme Court on Tuesday upheld Allison Chapman's disorderly conduct conviction for yelling at the teens to get out of town. Four teens parked on a public road in front of Chapman's house in 2001 weren't blasting their stereo at the time, although Chapman said they did so almost every night. Chapman admitted he went into the street and scolded the teens. He denied shouting or yelling, but he said he used an expletive in order to get them to leave. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, may I help you?
Tell me what the future holds.
Ah, good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
When you hear a highly paid athlete say about a new contract, it's not about the money. You can bet it's about the money. Likewise, when you hear a corporate chieftain say about a new advertising campaign, it's not meant to be intrusive. You can bet it's meant to be very intrusive. Indeed, the very idea of advertising is to intrude into your head, doing whatever it takes to get there and plant a brand name like some alien pod of commercialization. Take the exec who made the not-intrusive assertion. He's a Toyota honcho, and he just ponied up $100 million for branding rights to the basketball stadium in Houston. That means that this taxpayer-built facility will now be called the Toyota Center. It'll be covered inside and out with Toyota's logo and ads. Its lounge will be named Lexus Lounge. Its parking garage will be named for Toyota's Tundra trucks. It will have Toyota vehicles positioned prominently throughout the arena. And there'll be a Toyota sales office at the games, staffed with sales reps hawking the cars. But at least, it's not meant to be intrusive. Then there's the brand new public monorail system in Las Vegas. Its naming rights are being sold to corporations that'll plaster the place with their logos and ads as though they own it. First to buy into this monorail was Nextel, the phone huckster. It'll have one of the system's trains covered with its corporate colors, name, logo, and promos. One of the monorail's main stops will be named the Nextel Station, complete with a store and a Nexpert bar staffed with employees promoting products. Yet Nextel's VP for marketing says, "I'm sensitive to the issue of over-commercialization." Yeah, like a hog is sensitive to overeating. You want sensitive? The ad agency peddling the people's monorail says it doesn't see the system as transportation, but as transportainment. This is Jim Hightower saying, "Take me now, Lord. I've lived too long."
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There was a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. Hopefully shortly on the program, we're going to have on the Republican candidate who's running up against George Bush. We have a slight technical difficulty at the moment. So in the meantime, what I wanted to share with you is going back to our to the beginning of the program when we were talking about tax cuts and balanced budgets. One of the things that the cons love to say is that the JFK proved with a tax cut that it would stimulate the economy. And the tax relief started with JFK. It was his, the noble Democrat, right? JFK is the Democrat that the Republicans generally don't like to trash. But in fact, JFK didn't refer to it as a tax cut, because it wasn't. There was a reduction in the top rate. The top rate that he had inherited from Roosevelt, going back to the war, was 90%. But there were so few people paying that because there were so many loopholes that he said, okay, let's take that down to 70% and close up the loopholes and we'll collect even more money. And in fact, let me just share with you in JFK's own words. And he's at the very end, this is very pointed, at the very end, he says, and Mr. Nixon has been distorting my words. You know, Nixon's running around going, this tax cut's going to be irresponsible. And JFK's like, that's not what it is.
Yes, I have stated in both debates and state again that I believe in a balanced budget and have supported that concept during my 14 years in the Congress. The only two times when an unbalanced budget is warranted would be during a serious recession, and we had that in 58 in an unbalanced budget of $12 billion, or a national emergency where there should be large expenditures for national defense, which we had in World War II and during part of the Korean War.
We had a $12 billion deficit in 1958. Did you get that, $12 billion? We're looking at now $500 billion. Anyhow, as he continues.
Third, I think it's possible to gain a $700 million to $1 billion through tax changes.
Now, see, he said gain. We're going to actually increase taxes, but he didn't want to call it a tax increase, so he said tax changes.
Which I believe would close up loopholes on dividend withholding, on expense accounts.
So let's take care of the business stuff, and then we're going to adjust the top rate as well.
So in my judgment, we would spend more money in this administration on aid to education, we'd spend more money on housing, we'd spend more money, and I hope more wisely, on defense than this administration has done. But I believe that the next administration should work for a balanced budget, and that would be my intention. Mr. Nixon misstates my figures constantly.
As do the Republicans today.
Which, is, of course, right. But the fact of the matter is, here is where I stand, and I just want to have it on the public record.
Okay, JFK, it is now once again on the public record. Okay, President Bush was served Friday with a personal, this is back in the first week of January, with a RICO complaint. You know, this story has been floating around a lot, and this is one of those things where you just don't know how it's going to play out. I mean, this is the kind of thing. Ellen Mariani is the wife of a man who died in one of the two towers, I believe, died in 9/11. And her attorney, Philip Berg, has sued George Bush and several other members of his administration under the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, RICO. This is the act that was put on the books to go after the mafia, to go after organized crime. Among those served, besides, and they actually served them 2 weeks ago. I mean, they gave them, you know, here you are. And among those served, besides the president, were Vice President Richard Cheney, who may now also be being prosecuted by the French government. And they're also, you know, the Securities and Exchange Commission is looking into Cheney. There's so many investigations of Dick Cheney going on right now. They need to create another war just to distract us from that. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, Attorney General John Ashcroft, CIA Director George Tenet, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, Secretary of Transportation Norman Mineta, Victim Compensation Fund Special Master Kenneth Feinberg, former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, Zacharias Moussaoui, and former President George Herbert Walker Bush. And they say that they require an answer within 60 days. Ellen Marinari told us last night, this is the Information Clearinghouse, quote, there was ample warning of these attacks, and now I hear from news reports that Condi Rice doesn't want to testify publicly under oath about all the intelligence briefings which warned about planes flying into buildings. What does she have to hide? The widow continued, our Congress created new laws to protect themselves, the White House, and the insurance corporations. Insurance lobbyists were even talking to representatives and senators on the afternoon of the attacks. And so Billy in California has some thoughts on the State of the Union address that's coming up. What is that? Next week, is that? It's the 19th? Say that again, Billy?
Next Monday, I think.
It's next Monday, yeah, okay. What are your ponderings on that?
Well, I just want to quickly respond to what you were talking about, the widow. Notice takes a hero's widow to be the only person who can feel like they can criticize Bush that clearly without, of course, having the IRS after him and God knows what else these sons of spooks do to us.
Well, who knows what has happened to her on the one hand. On the other hand, my understanding is that there's a certification process. You know, some judge has to at some point say, okay, this is a legitimate case and it's going to go forward, and they're awaiting that process. That's my understanding.
So So we do have the State of the Union coming up, and one incontrovertible fact that we've learned about George Bush is that he likes to lie during the State of the Union. So I was wondering if you and your other guests and your callers could help me figure out what he's going to lie about this time. Last time, he lied about a few things, like, you know, yellow cake in Nigeria. He lied about spending a lot of money on AIDS in Africa. He lied about putting a lot of money behind hydrogen. You know, that was his pretense to science last year. This year it's Mars or moon or whatever. So
yeah,
what
and
is
I think
he going to lie about?
Thing. The Mars and Moon thing is going to be just like the AIDS in Africa thing. He's going to propose a big initiative, and then he's going to fund it with a little tiny. I mean, he's talking about increasing NASA's salary by $1 billion. I mean, that's not even 10%. Yeah, the entire agency's salary, the entire agency's budget is $15 billion, and the best estimates are that building a permanent base on the moon and putting somebody on Mars is going to cost at least $1,000 billion, $1 trillion.
Yeah, you got to use the word trillion when you start to talk about that.
Yeah, and
well, there you go. You took the low hanging fruit there, my friend. Yeah, it's real easy to know he's going to be lying about the science we're going to pursue.
Yeah, he's going to be lying about the state of Iraq.
There you go.
He's going to say, you know, we brought democracy to these folks, and kind of conveniently omitting the fact that, you know, rape, robbery, murder rates are higher in Iraq than I mean, it's out of control. People are terrified. The newspapers are being censored. We have kicked several of the Arab news services out of the country.
Now you're rolling.
You know,
what are your thoughts? Tell us that we're safer since he's gone to Iraq. That's one of the biggest lies imaginable. The recruitment, because I've got some friends in Al-Qaeda, not true. Their recruitment numbers are up about 500%, wouldn't you think?
Oh, at least.
Yeah.
Al-Qaeda's loving this. I mean, this was, you know, if ever there was one of those briar patch moments, you know, Osama bin Laden saying, you know, please go into Iraq, had to be one of them.
Yeah, Iraq is like the poster, Uncle Osama wants you.
There you go.
So anyway, that's it. I just wanted to sort of suggest that the man will be lying like crazy, and it might be fun to try to figure out, as he's sitting there, we should each sort of yell out as he speaks, and they all clap, we should be yelling out, there's another lie! Ooh, there's a good lie!
Here's a challenge for you, Billy. How many of his lies can you identify when you listen to the state? Why don't we do a contest on next Tuesday. On, you know, how many did you spot? And we'll
That's
just, you
it.
Know, people can call in and say, well, I found 13, I found 11, I found two of them.
And the person who finds the most verifiable lies is going to get a copy of your book.
Oh, that's a good, sure, I'll put that up. That's
there
a great idea.
Okay, there, buddy.
That's a great idea. Billy, thanks. Thanks for the call. I appreciate that. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. And Nick in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Nick.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to make the point. Can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to make the point that I don't think that the space initiative is so much about funding a trip to Mars as it is about defunding the International Space Station. George Bush is allergic to international cooperation.
Well, that's an interesting thought. You're right. The International Space Station is not a U.S. program. In fact, the Soviets started it, didn't they, with Mir?
Yeah.
I mean,
and NASA has already said that that will be the death knell. It's the death sentence for the International Space Program.
Which involves the European space agencies, the Russian space agency. Huh,
yeah, and which bailed out the shuttle program when ours exploded.
Yeah, yeah. I hadn't considered that, and you make perfect sense. I frankly don't, and that would be a nice benefit for him. I think the main thing, though, is that he's trying to do what JFK did, you know, which, whether it's cynical or noble is hard to say. At least JFK was not dealing in this ridiculous environment where he had $500 billion in deficits, a national debt of $7 trillion. And, you know, where JFK, after the Bay of Pigs disaster, said, well, we've got to put a man on the moon and bring him back in our lifetimes. There were people at the time who said he's only saying that to recalibrate us, you know, to redirect our attention. And it worked. It actually inspired America. And
it's a great distraction.
Yeah. The tragedy of this, I suspect, will be that it ain't going to happen. That George Bush is going to talk about it. He's going to throw $1 billion at NASA and they're going to get all geared up for it. And then he's going to be out of office, you know, either next year or 5 years from now.
Oh, Lord, I hope so. But that being the case, I have been trying to think what the immediate benefit to George Bush would be. And apart from the distraction, it's the defunding of the International Space Station so that we can eventually have militarization of space.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. It makes great sense. Nick, thanks thanks for the call. Thanks for sharing that. Five impolite questions for the president. Don Williams back on January 9th in the Knox News, the newspaper for Knox. I don't know, K-N-O-X. I don't know if it's a radio station or a city, but anyhow, in the Knox News, I thought this was a great little summary. He says, these are questions from Don Williams to George W. Bush. Number one, why won't you tell us about those daily briefings you received in the 9 months or so leading up to the September 11, 2001? Why? I mean, he refuses to talk to the 9/11 Commission. They're talking about subpoenaing him. They're trying to drag, you know, to get the investigation extended so that it doesn't expire in May. And he's doing this. Well, no, you know, we're not going to. You can take us to court. Blah, blah, blah. Why doesn't he want to share that information? The administration says there's secrets in there. Well, the 9/11 Commission has said you can take out the secrets. We just want to see the stuff relevant to 9/11. No response. We'll get to the other four right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Back, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And it looks like the Republican who is running against George Bush in the New Hampshire primary, John Buchanan, is not going to be with us in the program today. Apparently, he forgot and has gone off someplace and nobody knows where. So, sorry about that. Anyhow, so much for our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. I want to continue with these five impolite questions for the president, though. I think this is excellent that Don Williams wrote this. Would you please acknowledge that it was mostly elements in Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, not Iraq, who worked with al-Qaeda to bring down the World Trade Center? It's a good impolite question. I mean, see, these are the kind of questions that Helen Thomas used to ask, and that's why she got bounced to the back of the room and George never calls on her anymore. Why is it taking so long to get to the bottom of the Valerie Plame Wilson affair? Excellent. After all, your daddy was the former head of the CIA. Couldn't you have convened a meeting to find out who did this and knock some heads together? One would think. I have a letter from Henry Waxman today. Henry Waxman sent a letter to, I believe it was to Ashcroft. I'd have to dig it out and look at it. But to the White House. Maybe it was to the president. Saying, basically, why did it take you over 70 days to decide to investigate a felony outing a CIA agent, and yet within a matter of hours you were investigating Paul O'Neill's telling the truth? I mean, what's the deal here? Anyhow, another impolite question for George Bush. Does some fundamental religious belief, say that the end of the world is coming soon, influence your policies on the environment and nuclear weapons? If not, how do you explain policies that seem designed to destroy the Earth? He goes on to point out, you've tripled allowable levels of mercury pollution, shifted the burden of toxic cleanup from polluters to taxpayers, changed the rules for cleaning up America's dirtiest power plants, undermined the Endangered Species Act, and lied about the air at Ground Zero after 9/11. And he goes on to say, your administration has broken or otherwise compromised about 10 international treaties. These include the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, the Chemical Weapons Commission, the Biological Weapons Convention, the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, the Kyoto Protocol on Global Warming, and the UN Convention on Climate Change. And then finally, he says, does it worry you that the dollar appears to be in free fall just now? Analysts blame this largely on our increasing deficit. Yeah, well, here we are. Don Williams is the founding editor of New Millennium's writing, and he's in Knoxville, Tennessee. So that's it must be the Knoxville newspaper, Knox News. And thank you to him for that. Some excellent questions there. This is completely off topic, but I thought it was interesting. There's a computer services group, you know, as a, you know, computer consultants kind of thing. And they did this thing with 10,000 Langa list readers, and they sent them all an email. I sent one. This was to test the reliability of email. I sent one plain text attachment-free email to each of these volunteers. They had 10,000 people who volunteered. No spam-like components, such as offers to enlarge this or shrink that, no attachments, no viruses, no HTML, no embedded scripts. Plus, the recipients knew they were expecting the mail. They knew it was coming. Even though the results were dismal, some 40% of the test emails did not make it through. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that very interesting? We'll see how... I have come to rely very heavily on email, and the idea that, you know, some significant percentage of the time it's not working is one that's a little bit spooky. Not that that has anything to do with politics. We could talk about maybe should the post office regulate email and thereby cut down on spam or something like that. But that's off on a whole other tangent. Anyhow, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's 29 minutes after the hour. And we'll be back right after this.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Scientists are starting to pay more attention to cool coral. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of coral reefs grow in the warm waters of the tropics, but scientists are starting to find more coral in very different environments. They're finding it in water that's cold, deep, and sometimes very far north. Bob Stone is a marine ecologist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and he works out of a laboratory near Juneau, Alaska. He's documented an expanse of coral organisms near the Aleutian Islands in more than 1,000 feet of water. Stone says people have known for years that coral grew in those waters. Commercial fishing operations routinely dragged pieces of it to the surface in fishing gear. But no one knew what the seascape looked like until the summer of 2002. That's when Stone rowed to the seafloor in a small research submarine and took pictures.
I said it reminded me very much of places that I've been to in the tropics, and it did, both in terms of the colors and the structure of the corals. You know, some of them are low-lying, some of them are high, some of them look like trees, some look like bushes. So it truly looked like a tropical seascape to me. Most of them are orange, of course. That seems to be the predominant color for a lot of our sea life in these northern latitudes. I'm not really sure why, but there were other colors too, you know, some greens and purples and even some blue sponges and stuff.
Stone says the ocean bottom was like a vast, colorful garden. He routinely uses the term coral garden to distinguish these environments from coral reefs that form in much warmer water. The cool corals are fragile and grow slowly, and people are worried that they're being seriously damaged by fishing gear. Stone and his colleagues dove about 60 times in their survey of the Aleutian Islands. He says they saw damage from fishing gear on about half of those excursions. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The place where smart people get their news. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, and Michael in Santa Fe has one more impolite question for George Bush. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Tom. My question to George Bush is, why are there 25,000 troops waiting at Air Force bases or military bases waiting for medical care, for surgery?
Yeah, that's an excellent one, too.
That was in the New Mexican this morning. Some of the Santa Feans want to read that. It's right there. And also, yeah. We'll note the suicide rate. I didn't know about that. Oh, yeah. Good Lord, it's way up among the troops. So that's another really impolite question to ask him.
Yeah. I would guess, by the way, that we probably saw the same thing during Vietnam.
But, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
I'll let you go. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate the call. Here's Michael Toth, the guy who puts together our archives. The archives of this program, the last year's programs are sliced and diced by category and organized. Michael's extraordinary. He's organized these things. You can find them by clicking the archives button at tomhartman.com. And he received a letter from the Republican National Committee. Soliciting a contribution and evaluating the Democrats. And he says, the letter and this is the letter he wrote back to them. He says, a letter from your organization begging for money prompted me to visit your website. While perusing through the topics, I decided to take a look at Democrats in depth. It's laughable that in each candidate's headline, the word liberal was used, except candidate Joe Lieberman, of course. Your use of the word liberal is what is laughable. Fortunately for the RNC, most that visit your website don't understand the meaning of the word, so allow me to help. From the Encarta Dictionary, the word liberal means one of three different things, or all three. Number one, broad-minded, tolerant of different views and standards of behavior in others. Number two, progressive politically or socially, favoring gradual reforms, especially political reforms that extend democracy, distribute wealth more evenly, and protect the personal freedom of the individual. Or, number three, generous with time, money, or some other asset. Wow, Michael says, these are very redeeming qualities. Also, you should note the antonyms of liberal are narrow-minded and measly. I would say, and conservative. On behalf of the Democratic candidates, I thank you for the compliment. Well said. By the way, there's a story going around this from one of the newspapers in Eastern Europe. I think it must be Bulgaria. It's the Sofia Morning News that Saddam Hussein has cancer of the lymph glands. This, according to the Kuwaiti newspaper Al Anba, that he had this before we attacked. Allegations of Saddam's illness appeared before the military campaign in Iraq last year when one of his private doctors residing in Syria claimed that the former dictator suffered from cancer. And you wonder if that might have anything to do with the decision of the U.S. officials to declare him a war criminal. Maybe they know that he's going to die soon or something like that and want to make sure that nobody's pointing fingers at them. Texas A&M University has banned legacies. Isn't this interesting? I mean, the way that George W. Bush got into college was not based on his grades. It was based on the fact that his father went to the same school and made large contributions. And last week, Texas A&M, not the school that George went to, but Texas A&M abolished its preferential admission policies for legacies. Local politicians had been outraged that the university continued to give special treatment to legacies, the vast majority of whom are white, while refusing to give the same consideration to minority applicants. But ending preferences was not their goal. What they wanted was affirmative action. But instead, all forms of affirmative action, apparently at Texas A&M, have been done away with. We'll have to keep track of that and see how that shakes out. The Associated Press reports that President Bush is signing a measure today. This is from the Progress Report. Is signing a measure today at increasing minority homeownership. This is the American Dream Down Payment Act. He's gonna have this whole hoop-de-doop at the White House and get people together and sign the bill, and it'll be a great photo op, and it'll be on the news tonight. You know, George Bush is helping Congress spend $200 million to subsidize down payments and closing costs for poor families. And it sounds marvelous. And the bill is well-intentioned. The problem is that it seeks to paper over massive cuts to other housing programs that the president's pushing. As the National Low-Income Housing Coalition notes, the president's budget moving through Congress calls for the elimination of the HOPE 6 program, despite the president staging photo ops at HOPE 6 housing projects to tout them. The president's budget also proposes to not fully fund all Section 8 vouchers currently in use. Additionally, just this year, the administration orchestrated the one-vote defeat of the National Housing Trust Fund, a bill that would have provided several billions of dollars a year, not just $200 million, for the creation of housing for extremely low-income families. That a quote from Senator Paul Sarbanes, by the way, of Maryland. All told, Sarbanes says, the administration has proposed nearly $2.5 billion in cuts in public housing. And so today he's signing a $200 million bill. You know, $2.5 billion is 2,500 million. And so we're going down to $200 million today, and with much hoopla. I mean, this is like the Clean Air Act, you know, that the Clear Skies Initiative that triples the allowable levels of mercury in our air, and Bush campaigns on it as we reduced mercury. Well, yes, there was a reduction over what it was before, but it was one third of the reduction that the law required, because, you know, he changed the law. Here's the other problem. The bill that the president signs will certainly make good promises. The problem is, this bill does not actually spend money on anything. It merely authorizes Congress to fund a new program. See, a lot of people miss this. I didn't understand this for years, that you can sign a bill that's an authorization and it doesn't, and then Congress has to pass another piece of legislation to actually spend the money. So the president can say, okay, you can spend up to $200 million, then it's got to go back through the whole process again. It simply authorizes Congress. But in order for money to actually go out the door, it requires the president to propose the new funding in his budget and the Congress to endorse it, both very big ifs, considering the White House's track record. Over the past 3 years, the White House has staged photo ops and bill signings to tout authorizing legislation. So this is an old trick of theirs. Only to then fail to fund the same programs come budget time, most famously on education, for example. I mean, you know, No Child Left Behind. The president spent his first year in office touting that bill. He held a high-profile signing ceremony for its passage. Remember that? Ah, No Child Left Behind. Yes, we did it. But then weeks later, he proposed a budget that was billions short of actually funding No Child Left Behind, leaving communities all across America holding the bag and causing your and my property taxes to go up because our schools are now mandated to buy these tests from these corporations who contribute to the politicians, and enriching corporate America marvelously. And the funds to buy those tests that are now mandated by No Child Left Behind, they were authorized, but they were never appropriated. They and in Bush's budget, they weren't even asked for. So it just didn't. You know, it doesn't happen. This is why Howard Dean says there was no middle class tax cut. You know, everybody got $600 or $300 or $1,200 or whatever they got. And I guarantee you, your local taxes, your state taxes, your city taxes, if you pay them, your property taxes, and the fees that you pay, your motor vehicle fees, all these other things, it all went up. You can't take hundreds of billions of dollars out of an integrated system and not have something have to fill that. And Bush, you know the story. I don't need to go on and on about this. There's even more cuts on the way. The Sacramento Bee reports that a Bush administration proposal to turn the nation's premier low-income housing subsidy program over to the states is withering.
Withering.
Because of concerns about cutbacks. Based on a spending bill moving through Congress, and I quote, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities estimated that 66,000 recipients across the country could lose their rent subsidies in November. This will be next November. Forcing them to move in with friends, rent substandard housing, or face homelessness. 66,000 people going to be tossed out in the cold next November, just in time for Christmas. Home ownership has long been an anchor in building wealth in America. And this is George Bush's, you know, when you see the news coverage tonight of his signing this bill, just ask yourself, just listen carefully. Let's see if Tom Brokaw and Dan Rather and Peter Jennings and whoever's telling it on CNN or on Faux News, let's see if they say the president signed a bill to authorize $200 million for housing for low and middle income people. This balanced out by $2.5 billion in cuts he has proposed to these same types of programs. And by the way, this bill is not funded. We'll have to wait until next year and see if he includes the funding in his budget. He didn't with AIDS. He didn't with No Child Left Behind. He did with AIDS, but it was much smaller. He had talked about it, $15 billion, $5 billion a year. No, it came out to a fraction. In a press conference yesterday, we've had a couple of calls about this. We've talked about this, and you know, back to the Center for American Progress, a great source for information here. In a press conference yesterday, President Bush thanked Congress for, quote, passing my jobs and growth package, which is doing just what it's supposed to do, end quote. Maybe you heard that clip last night on the news. But according to the Economic Policy Institute, that's just not the case. Last July, the White House Council of Economic Advisors, and this is now quoting from the Economic Policy Institute, quote, predicted that the president's latest round of tax cuts would produce 1,530,000 jobs in the first 5 months, end quote. In fact, only 271,000 jobs were created over those 5 months for a cumulative shortfall of 1,259,000 jobs. And the U.S. Council of Mayors reports that these new jobs are of lower quality. The average wage of new jobs created during the 2004-2005 period is forecast to be $35,855, significantly lower than the $43,629 average wage of those jobs lost between 2001 and 2003. It just goes on and on and on. Bush also claimed that the White House has a plan which will, quote, shrink the deficit in half in a 5-year period, end quote. But if you look at it, the Congressional Budget Office looked at this thing. This is, you know, the bipartisan, the CBO is not, you know, some right-wing or left-wing think tank, right? This is the CBO. They looked at this thing. And they noticed that Bush's estimates leave out big expenses. He says he's going to cut the deficit, but he doesn't include in the equation the new Medicare legislation. Doesn't take into account the extension of tax cuts that he's been pushing so aggressively. And so in reality, the deficit's going to remain well over $300 billion a year for at least the next 10 years. That's $3 trillion. I mean, when Ronald Reagan came into office, the entire federal deficit wasn't even $1 trillion. And Reagan gave us the biggest deficit in history and one of the worst recession, and the worst recession since the Great Depression as a result of his tax cuts. And then he spent 6 years raising taxes every single year to try and dig out of the hole that he created in 1981. And George Bush, who followed him, George Bush Sr., you know, inherited this mess and was increasing tax. Remember, read my lips, no new taxes, and then he did it. He was faced with the choice of do what Argentina did and spend us into bankruptcy, which might be politically expedient, but is going to devastate future generations, or raise taxes. And he took the honorable course, and of course, you know, politically it hurt him. Although that was a fairly close race, and it's interesting to speculate who would have won had Ross Perot not been in that race. But anyhow, exaggerating the coalition, in the press conference, the president repeatedly mentioned the approximately 60 nations who make up the international coalition supporting the U.S. This is from the same press conference, right? The U.S. in Iraq, right? He says, yes, the number 60, we got 60 people, 60 nations with us. However, that overstates the mission. For example, the United States has 130,000 troops currently in Iraq, while the next largest country, England, has under 10,000. And many, such as Estonia, New Zealand, Moldavia, they're counted in the coalition of the willing, though they've sent fewer than 100 people. And some on the list, like tiny Palau, have no troops at all. They've only provided good wishes and symbolic support. The great coalition of the willing. Deconstructing Bush's press conferences. It'll be interesting, as Billy suggested, to deconstruct his State of the Union address when it comes out next week. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Show.
Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troop lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they had stated in a policy and in a
this is
a
what they
contract?
Said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
I would like to see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it. Stop surfing and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Double thanks today to Shar Jones for running the board, for engineering our program there in Detroit. Shar, I forgot to thank you yesterday, so here's your thank you, thank you. And thanks also to Louise Hartman, who produced the program here in Vermont, to Brad Walrod in New York City, who edited our music today, and to the many and extraordinary folks in our chat room who dropped in and shared the afternoon with us. Now, here's the last news of the day, and this really focuses the point that I started 3 hours ago with this show on the need for, as the National Academy of Sciences said, the need for national health care. It should be part of the commons. It is in every other nation in the world. It's a given that you have the right to health care. And health care, you know, I mean, it has the face of health care has changed so much in the last 50 years. It has become so expensive in many ways and so high tech in so many ways that it's just the appropriate thing to do. It's the right thing to do now. I mean, maybe it wasn't when the country was founded, but times change. You know, Jefferson said every 19 years, every 20 years, you should rewrite the Constitution because times will change. He says the Constitution wasn't meant to last forever any more than a small coat on as a young man grows. We really do need national health care. And here we have now the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, it has gone into meetings with Visa, MasterCard, UPS, and FedEx and asked them to turn in people who are buying their drugs from Canada so that they can go after them. You get this? I mean, we've got senior citizens. Bernie Sanders organizes bus trips of senior citizens from Vermont up to Montreal to buy pharmaceuticals. But if you buy them through the mail now, the FDA is trying to get your private records so that they can go after you. This is just crazy. It's absolutely crazy. All it does is protect the profits of the drug companies. That's wrong. This is Tom Hartman. Thanks for being with us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. We'll see you then.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
That Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephan's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material.